Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast for Sunday, September 25th, 2016, episode 1326. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Gazelle, the online marketplace for buying and selling used gadgets. Shop from a variety of certified pre-owned electronics or trade one in for cash. Give new life to a used device at gazelle.com today. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Sorry, didn't mean to wake you. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage process into the 21st century with a fast, easy, and completely online process. Check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/techguy. And by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com right now and enter the promo code TECHGUY for 30% off your entire order. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk about computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, GPSs. Well, not really. And all that stuff. Actually, it's funny, GPSs, right? You remember going and buying a Garmin or a TomTom and putting it in your car and a little suction cup and put it right on the windshield. Then cars started having them built in, so that wasn't as important. And then everything you have now has a GPS in it. Apple's new watch has a GPS in it. Really kind of an amazing transformation, isn't it? Well, we know where we are at all times now. It's so hard sometimes to remember how things used to be. We're like a fish in the water. We're surrounded by it, but we're not really aware of the water. We're not well equipped to notice how things have changed. Occasionally, you know, old timers like me will say, "I remember when you had to go into the bank to get money. You had to go in the door and there were people inside. I remember when you had a little machine hooked up to your telephone line and it had a paper, a little crinkly up paper, it would spit out documents. I remember when you had to call people to talk to them." And now we just, you know, when's the last time you've been inside a bank or used a fax machine? Or I'll tell you what, when's the last time you made a phone call? I know a lot of us still make phone calls, but I think that's starting to die out too, right? We don't even think about the phone aspect of a smartphone as much as we now talk about the camera. Camera's number one, right? The screen, the games you can play. Well, that's another thing that's changed. We cannot stand. I notice this now with myself and with everybody around me. We cannot stand to sit idle for even 1 second. You're in an elevator. You pull out your phone. You're in a grocery line. You pull out your phone. People don't just look around anymore or talk to each other. They pull out their little amusement device. The Register calls smartphones fondle slabs. The Register's a British tech publication. They have the kind of British attitudes towards all this. But the idea is it's a slab of glass. They're all basically the same, right? That you fondle. I was noticing the other day, so I'm standing there, and I what was I doing? I can't remember. Oh, I know what I was. I was on a light rail train on the way to the football game, to the 49ers game, and it's a crowded train, and it's a, you know, 20-minute trip on the light rail, and I'm looking around. A lot of young people all have their phone out, and I'm kind of being my stubborn old man guys. I didn't pull my phone out. I'm not going to look at it. I'm going to look around. I'm going to talk to people. Nobody wants to talk to you. They're looking at their phone. Okay, I'm not going to talk to people. I'm just going to look around. Man, it's boring in here. But then I pulled out my phone. I did. I could do it about 3 minutes. and then I pulled out my phone. And it's not like there's compelling content on there. I look at it and I go, well, I already looked at Instagram. I guess I could look at my Facebook feed. Nothing new there. Anything going on Twitter? Well, there's always something new there, but none of it makes any sense. So you're kind of still staring off into space, aren't you? You have different stimuli, but it's not like you're learning something. Maybe you are. Maybe you use your time to good. You have an iTunes U college lecture all queued up that you can listen to 2 minute increments. That's part of the problem, right? Is you don't spend much time at it. Even a game sometimes. Although the games that are doing really well, I noticed lately, are games you can play 30 seconds at a time. They don't require long-term engagement. Things like Angry Birds, you just shoot a bird or two and get on with your life. Or I don't mean shoot them, kill them. You shoot them in a slingshot. Well, I guess it does kill them, doesn't it? You ever think about that? Angry Birds is a vicious game. You're aiming at pigs with birds, but those birds don't survive. Okay. It's just something I think about, I guess. Candy Crush, you can play just, one board. I mean, they're designed for that. And the most successful stuff. Now, Pokemon Go is a little different. Although, is it still the thing, or is it over now? I think there was a wave of people. By the way, it has been proclaimed the most successful smartphone application of all time. Half a billion downloads, something like that. Wow! And for a while, everybody's playing it. Remember last month, everybody was playing it. Now it's more. I think the hardcore people still play it, but do you? Do you see the gaggles of people? I remember when I was in Coronado in San Diego area, there was one spot, it was actually a meridian in between the roadway where people were, I guess they had some pokey gyms, some of the attractions, and it was like Woodstock. They couldn't move. Anyway, is that still going on? I'll have to check in with my friends in Coronado. My sense is that's kind of died out. That game was a little different because that game actually did engage you, right? That was frankly why you knew people were playing it, because they were walking down the street staring at their phone and swiping up with their finger occasionally. That's the exception, perhaps. And maybe that's why it's not continuing in its upward arc, its trajectory. Because you can't just play it for 13 seconds while you're in the grocery line or waiting for your tank to fill up at the gas station. Is it just me? I'm nervous about pulling my phone out of my pocket at the gas station. We've heard that, I don't know how true this is, but the static sparks can be generated from pulling your phone out of your pocket. You're not supposed to use your cell phone while you're pumping gas. Did you know that? I don't think anybody knows that. I think there's people. I see people who smoke cigarettes. Well, that is definitely not supposed to happen. At least with your fondle slab, you're not going to blow the gas station up. Or are you? I hope you're not. Anyway, keep it in your pocket. Try it once just to see. Of course, anytime there's a bunch of people and mostly young people doing that, then there's a whole bunch of people, mostly people my age, going, you kids, smell the air. Stop and smell the roses. Look around you. See what's going on. Life is happening and you're missing it. I don't know. Is it? Are you missing it? You're missing the stuff that's immediately around you. But at the same time, you have a portal, a window into a whole different world. Just because it's digital doesn't mean it doesn't exist in some form or fashion. I think the stuff that you do and see and play on the internet, I mean, I don't know. Is that any more or less a waste of time than looking around and seeing what's out the window? I have to say, when I was sitting in that light rail train, I felt like I was wasting my time not using my fondle slab. Probably shouldn't say that in public. Not using my smartphone. I feel like looking out the window, well, that's nice. Looking at people, they start to think, why is he looking around at me? What's he doing? Why isn't he looking at his phone? Are you a creep? Why aren't you looking? I did. I felt like a weirdo not looking at my phone when everybody else is. It's like being in the library and everybody's quiet and looking at their books and you're looking around. It just doesn't work. Anyway, I just a thought. You know, I think we are moving towards a more balanced. I hope we're moving towards a more balanced approach to this, where we recognize that it's not the end all and be all to have the smartphone and stare at it all the time. That there is other stuff going around, but at the same time, not rejecting it. We need balance, right? These things are useful. You've got a supercomputer in your pocket that's always connected to the internet. You can, you know, in the 15 minutes that you're standing in the line at DMV, you can find out what's going on around the world. That's pretty cool. Tell you what's going on right here. Oh my, it's the phones. Your calls coming up next as we continue to talk tech. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy, and let's take some calls. Let's go, as they say, let's go to the phones. On the line, Dave in Canyon Lake, California. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for hanging on. What can I do for you?
Well, I've had a problem since I did an upgrade to Windows 10 on my desktop PC.
You and a lot of other people, I might add. This seems to be very common.
Well, every day or two, all of a sudden, I'll notice that all my graphics and the desktop icons will more than double in size. And then that's just the warning sign that it's about to crash.
Oh, and, Lord.
So then it locks up, and the only thing I can do is hold down the power key until it shuts off. And
so it kind of swells up and then explodes.
Yep. And I've done a Google on this, and I'm not the only person this has happened to.
Yeah. So when you did the upgrade from Windows 7 or 8.1?
From 7, yeah.
7. And did it have problems right away, or did it take a while?
You know, I didn't associate it right away, but it seemed like it probably took a little while.
Yeah. This sounds like, by the way, a video driver issue. That is a very common problem in general on Windows. And when you do an operating system upgrade, could very well be that's part of the problem. So the first thing I would do is make sure you got the latest drivers for your hardware. Now to do that, you need to figure out what your hardware is. Is it a laptop or a desktop?
Desktop.
And is it who made it?
It's an Acer.
Acer. So I don't know. You may have what they call integrated graphics. That is the graphics chip that Intel put on the motherboard. Or you may have additional graphics card, a GPU in there. That's the first thing you're going to have to figure out. But what I would do is go to the Acer website and get the drivers for that model machine. And they should have, by now, Windows 10 drivers. And that will include motherboard drivers and maybe video card drivers. If you want to figure out what video card you have, you can always look in the device manager. That'll give you a list of all the hardware. And you go to the graphics processor and you see what graphics card you have in there. I would get all of the latest drivers. Now, if you have a standalone GPU, there are other places you can get drivers for that. Acer should offer, their version of the drivers. But let's say you have an NVIDIA card in there. You can also go to NVIDIA and get and try their driver. I'm having, by the way, a similar problem with the anniversary update. Windows 10 worked fine, but we have an NVIDIA a Striker card in there from Asus, and it's crashing, blue screening, every time I try to run any of the virtual reality apps. And it blue screens with an error message that says the name of the driver. So I know it's a video driver problem. The reason I suspect your video driver is the ballooning icons. It sounds like, it's going, the display's going crazy. That usually means the video driver's either incompatible or buggy or damaged. So if you don't have a dedicated card, you're going to look for motherboard drivers from Acer. If you do have a dedicated card, you're going to figure out who makes that card. And get the drivers. I would try the Acer drivers first, but if it doesn't fix it, the drivers from that company.
Okay. Now I don't know if it's unrelated or not, but at about the same time I get this. All of a sudden, I'll do a startup on my PC, and it'll say all my favorites are gone using Internet Explorer.
Oh, that's nice.
and again, that's another problem. I've checked on Google, and everybody seems to have that problem, and the solutions are crazy. I don't know if I can figure it out, but it says there's a suspicious looking box that says click here to download the fix for this, and
I'm afraid
that's malware. So,
well, you don't know. I mean, that could be legitimate as well. I don't know how an end user is supposed to know, looking at that box, whether it's real or malware.
Yeah.
It could be.
I'm afraid to click on it.
Yeah, I don't blame you. It could be. So most manufacturers like Acer put some software on there to auto-update their hardware. HP does this. A lot of companies do that. So it may be some program Acer put on there that does an auto-update. It's an Acer, you said, right?
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm.
It may also be something a bad guy put on your system, or something, a pop-up from a browser that's trying to trick you into downloading malware. Isn't that ironic? How do you know the difference? Generally, if it's from Acer, you'll also be able to go to the Acer website by typing it in by hand and get the update. So tell me again. So your favorites disappear.
Yeah.
And then you get a pop-up.
Where it says file, edit, view, favorites, tools, and help.
Yeah.
That's gone.
Wait a minute. You mean your menus get mangled?
The menus disappear.
And holy cow.
You click somewhere on the menu bar, it's checked. It shows that, you know, that you've requested your favorites bar be there and there's a check next to it.
Yeah, you've got. So the browser is the is there are two ways people get infected, and then they both come from the internet. One is email with email attachments. The other is the browser, because that's, you know, I mean, a bad guy can't get into your house, one hopes, and put stuff on your system. So in which case he's got to get in through the internet. And so your browser, that's what's going on the internet. So it sounds like you've got a browser hijacker of some kind. They call them BHOs, browser hijacker objects, that has modified your toolbar. Which browser do you use? Internet Explorer, you said?
Internet Explorer, I believe 11.
Yeah. Sounds like there's something bad going on.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like you got some problems. Kind of hard to figure out where these.
Even if I open Google Chrome, I can't access my favorites.
Oh, this is getting worse and worse.
Yeah.
I would say you got some at best adware, at worst malware on your system.
Okay.
And the best advice, and I always give it, it's the worst advice at the same time. It's the best advice for security, the worst advice for the remainder of your day, which is to wipe the drive and reinstall Windows 10 on that sucker, which is a pain, I know. The other advice, I guess, is to try to figure out, boy, if it's doing it to Chrome and IE, that's bad. That's bad, because if we're just IE, most browser hijackers are browser specific. So if we're just IE, then I would say, oh, well, you got something, you know, extension or plugin on IE that's bad. You could go into IE and start it up in safe mode, for instance. You might try this anyway. Go to your start menu and look for the IE folder and start it in safe mode. And if you start it in safe mode and it's still happening, then it's not a browser extension or plugin or hijacker object. It's something deeper in the system. And that's my suspicion now, because it's also affecting your other browser, Chrome. I wish there was a button I could say, just push this button and it'll all get better. There isn't. The best thing to do would be reinstall, I'm sorry to say. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's time to get back to the calls. Boy, I feel bad for Dave, our last caller, the last segment is. And anybody's running Windows and these weird things happen, I just don't know what you do. I mean, the best advice is also the worst advice. The best advice is start over, fresh install. This, by the way, this would be a good reason. And this is what, by the way, experienced Windows users do, IT professionals do, to make a image of your drive. So If you're Dave and you're, all right, well, I'm going to bite the bullet and reinstall Windows. Guess I have to. The very first thing you do before you install Windows is get a good disk imaging program. And there's lots of them out there. There's Drive Image. There's Drive Snapshot. There's Macrium. There's Acronis, A-C-R-O-N-I-S. There's tons of these. We'll put a link. We'll put a list in the show notes of drive imagers. And what these do is they simplify your next time you have to wipe and install. They make a freeze-dried copy of the image of your system. It's kind of like making your own Windows install disk, but it's do it right away before you. Here's what I do. I usually make a three. So one, after you do the fresh install, boom, that's Windows 10, just boom, done. And you put these on a separate drive somewhere, and you lock them up so nothing can change them or modify them. You also are going to make one after you do all the Windows updates. So to install Windows 10, run Windows Update till there's nothing more, all the reboots, whatever, till there's nothing, you're done. This is up to date as of this day. September 25th, this is up to date, right? September 25th, 2016 on there. Windows 10 point, you know, it's 1607 dot whatever, all of the version numbers on there. That's also known good because you haven't yet, no exploits, right? You haven't done anything besides download Windows Update. Then the third version to make is probably the one that's going to be most useful. That is install your software, install everything you use all the time. Restore your favorites, the data that you know doesn't change much. Because again, this is going to be a freeze-dried, never-changing image of your hard drive. And keep that. And generally, that's the third one is the one you're going to use most of the time. You can go back earlier if you need to. But what that's going to do is save you a lot of time. Because the next time this happens, you go, oh, rats. And you just run the drive imager. And usually, a good drive imager will let you make kind of a you don't have to reinstall Windows first. You just be able to boot a disk. And it'll say, okay, give me the image. And it'll blast it on your hard drive. It'll wipe everything out. And your hard drive will be back to the way it was on September 25th, 2016. And it does that in minutes. I mean, like 10 minutes. Then you don't have to go, oh, gosh, I have to wipe the drive. Anybody who uses PCs a lot, and this isn't just Windows. This is Mac. I just did it the other day on my Mac. This is Linux. Has a system for quickly getting back up and running. You learn this after a while, that this is the most there's two things, the most valuable things you can do with a computer. Have a good backup and have an image or some way to quickly get back. With Linux, I have a script. So the idea is what reinstalling Windows from scratch takes a long time is a pain. So these images are a fast way to get you to the ground zero, and then you can build it up from there. Everybody should do that. You should also have boot disks that let you boot to an external disk. Could be Linux, could be Windows. Usually it's Linux with an operating system on it that you can boot up from and run. Linux, almost all versions of Linux offer these. They call them live CDs. You can do it on a thumb drive these days. And you boot your computer to it. And you can run an operating system. It's slow because it's running off a thumb drive, but now you've eliminated the operating system on the internal hard drive, and you can see, like, if your keyboard's acting up or your mouse is acting up or your screen's acting up, you can boot to this special version and see if it continues to act up. If it does, then, well, now we know it's hardware. If it doesn't, well, now we know it's the operating system on the hard drive. These are things that experienced computer users know about and do because it just saves you so much time in the long run. And I can go on and on. There's tools that people tend to have, antivirus scanners, things like SpinRite, which will check your disk. If you call an IT guy, if you have an IT guy at work or gal at work, just say, hey, what do you have in your toolkit? What do you do for yourself? And they'll have a process because anybody who does this all the time goes, yeah, that happens all the time. And it will save you an immense amount of trouble in the long run. It's a pain at first. You really only need to do it every time you reinstall the operating system. Oh, I'm sorry. I got off my high horse here, but this is so important. Let's get back to the phones. Jim is in Morrison, Colorado. Hello, Jim.
Hi, Leo.
Thanks for hanging on while I bluster.
No problem. I use Acronis a lot for imaging.
Acronis True Image is great, right?
Yes.
Saves you an immense amount of time.
So my question is, I'm planning a trip to Europe, a river cruise, And I'm wondering if I should take a portable firewall.
Oh, boy, this is a great question. First of all, congratulations. It's the most fun ever. It's very relaxing. Have you done it before?
I've a lot of ocean cruises, but this will be
easy. Yeah. I took my first river cruise last year, and it's very different from an ocean cruise. It's very, very slow.
Yes.
Not a lot to do, so you just have to slow down. The first couple of days, I'm kind of antsy, and then I realize, oh, just relax. Bring a good book, sit on the deck, and yes, bring a firewall. I do not travel anymore. I do not get on Wi-Fi access points unless I am protected, because I've learned increasingly it's dangerous. Now, the chances are there's nobody else going to be on that riverboat that's a dangerous person. Hackers generally don't do river cruises, right?
Right.
So chances are, you could take the chance. The last year's river cruise, I didn't use a firewall. But these firewalls, I use something called a tiny hardware firewall. That's what I'll be bringing on my next cruise. And what it does is it joins the Wi-Fi. Has some advantages. It joins the Wi-Fi and then allows you to access that same Wi-Fi from a number of devices. So you can use up to five devices. All of those devices are using a VPN. So without changing anything of the way those computers operate, they're just automatically on a virtual private network. That slows it down a little bit, although you'll see the internet is very slow on boats, as you know, anyway. So it's not the end of the world. But what it does do is it sanitizes you. It makes you safe from any bad actor on that network. And that way you can surf. You're still going to end up on the public internet. There's no way around that. And one hopes that the important things you're doing, like banking and using your credit cards and email, all of those should be HTTPS, secure encrypted transactions. But then the problem with using an open Wi-Fi access point is that you are allowing anybody else on that boat to be on your network. And if they should have with them something like, there's a device, for instance, called the Wi-Fi Pineapple that's sold kind of misleadingly as a security device for people who do something called pen testing, penetration testing. If you're a security professional, you act like a bad guy to see if the network's safe. And if you're going to do that, you need bad guy tools, and that's the Wi-Fi Pineapple. But it's widely available. It's not expensive, and a lot of bad guys use it to do things like create false access points for your... So here's one way I might attack you. I'd use this to figure out what other access points your computer joins, like the one you use at home that you join automatically, right?
Right.
And then I would spoof that. You wouldn't know about this, but your computer will go, oh, look, we're home, and would join that. And now all your traffic's going through his computer.
Mm-hmm.
That's an example of the kinds of attacks that are fairly easy to do. Now, I don't think anybody on that boat's going to have a Wi-Fi Pineapple.
Right.
So it's up to you how safe you want to be. Once I learned of the techniques bad guys can use in situations like this, at a hotel, at a coffee shop, on a boat, I carry a hardware firewall. There are a number of them, or use a VPN, but it's really, I think, a good idea. I really do. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great trip. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Walter is in Lando Lakes, Florida.
Yes, sir.
Is it Florida?
Yes, indeed, Florida. Yeah, we just had the hurricane come through here. So,
did you survive? Everything okay?
Yeah, but my whole land, I live on a lake, and my whole land is flooded. I'm about 4 or 5 inches underwater here. So,
I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I got a truck. I'm good.
Yeah, you got an amphibious truck.
Yes.
Wow. Yeah, wow.
I have learned so much from you. You have helped me make me be the IT person that I am, and I'm grateful to you. So thank you so much, Leo.
My pleasure. You know what? I love this stuff. And you're more of an expert than I am probably if you do this for a living. But I love talking about it, sharing what I know, getting the input from our listeners, from our chat room. I feel like we are stronger together, right? We're better by helping each other. The industry isn't going to help us. We got to do it for ourselves. So
yes,
thank you. I'm glad you appreciate it, and I appreciate your participation. Thank you.
appreciate it. Well, hopefully you can help me with something that's kind of something new that I want to make sure, maybe to be my retirement job when I get older.
Oh, good.
I've got a friend of mine has a company. He does exports and imports. He's got about 10 employees that he wants to do monitoring on, laptops and desktops.
Okay.
He wants to be able to see whether if they are actually working, if they're moving their mouse between working from 8 to 5, even as far as go to see if what they're looking at, maybe without their knowledge or with their knowledge.
Totally doable.
For me,
totally
to be
doable.
Able to log in and help them with problems in the like remotely if I'm down at the beach, you know, drinking margaritas.
So let's first talk about the legality of this, which is very quick conversation. It's totally legal. And I want every employee listening to understand that when you're on the company network, you're using company hardware, even if you're using company hardware at home, the company has the right, and courts have upheld this time and time again, without notice, to do all the things that Walter just mentioned, to completely surveil you, down to the point of looking at your screen, because it's company property. Now, in my opinion, Walter, if you're going to do this, and I understand why many employers want to do that, there is some, you know, obligation. The employer has a responsibility, for instance, to maintain a safe workplace. If you got some guy surfing porn in his cubicle, you have the obligation, not merely the right, but the obligation to stop it because it's creating a hostile work environment. And you're legally on the hook if you don't. So I understand why employers do this. I would, however, as a good employer, make sure you write and publish and get every employee to agree to a appropriate use document about how, first of all, saying up front, this is what we can and might do. You don't have to say will, might do. And these are your obligations to us as an employee so that they know, A, that there is no privacy at work, because not everybody knows this, and B, what they shouldn't do so that they know ahead of time what you're going to get mad at them for. So really, really important that you establish an appropriate use policy in the office first. And you would tell this to your friend, you know. It's not a hard thing to write. You could find them online. Then, in fact, there's a website called privacyrights.org. They have a workplace privacy and employee monitoring. And I would read this document because it'll describe what your obligations and rights are as an employer. And if you're an employee, read it so you know what your employer can do, because there's pretty much no restriction on what they can do. The only restrictions come from a pre-digital age. For instance, this is so funny. Your employer can read your email till the cows come home. But if he should pick up an extension and listen in on your phone call and the phone call's personal, he has to hang up.
Wow.
He can't listen to your phone call if it's personal. On the other hand, he can read your email no matter what the contents. So just understand that. And in this document, which is, from privacyrights.org, so you understand what side they're on, the very first thing they say is a majority of employers monitor their employees. Almost everything you do on your office computer can be monitored. And courts have upheld this because basically the employee is using your hardware and your internet, right? So there are a lot of different programs to do this with. I also feel like I should stand up a little bit for employees. There's reason to be judicious in this. You don't want to create a workplace where people are looking over their shoulder all the time, right? So that's why I think it's really important to communicate what you're doing, why you're doing it. You know, you wouldn't put a camera up in an employee's cubicle pointed right at him. That would kind of put a chilling effect on this worker, right? And that's in effect what you're doing. And the fact that you can do it secretly doesn't make it any better. You should let them know. And let them know why. It's really important. So most HR folks understand this. And if your friend is using an outsourced HR team or he has his own HR people, they'll be up on this a little bit. However, there is an infinite supply of stuff that can be used. I'm not sure. I don't know what the best programs are, but a simple Google search will find a variety of software that will do everything you want, including monitor their screens, You know, you could set up, the IT department could set up a wall of screens. It's everybody employee's screen, and they could have somebody sitting there looking and making sure they're not surfing porn. And, you know, I mean, you could certainly do it. It's not hard to do. I would just be careful. I would just encourage you to be open and upfront about it. We don't, by the way, I don't do that to my employees, as tempting as that would be. I just expect them to be responsible employees. But you know what? If somebody's there surfing porn and one of my employees sees it and goes and gets a lawyer and sues me, I'm liable. Mm-hmm. I'm liable. Mm-hmm. That's why this stuff exists. You're responsible to protect your employees against other employees. We did have an employee who was using remote access software, because we do extensively use remote access software, so some employees, editors and so forth, can go home and finish their work at home, and he was using that to spy on other employees. As soon as we learned about it, we terminated him, of course. Understand, there's reasons your employer wants to do this, and it's not merely because you guys are lazy. It's because there are some, you know, legal responsibilities. There's lots of ways to do this. Just do it with a light touch, as light a touch as you can. But you know what? We make people punch time cards, right?
Yes, crew. That's right.
We say, you know, I don't trust you to come in at 9 o'clock and go home at 5. Punch a time card.
Yep.
I want to know what your hours are. So, you know, this is just part of the workplace. And I think if you're listening and you're an employee, you should learn about your rights and also learn about what you don't have a right to do. And it may surprise you. It may surprise you. Yeah. Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
All right. I got a little follow-up if I have a moment.
Sure.
Some time later.
Yep. I got a little time.
One other thing, I guess something I don't think I've ever heard you talk about. What do you charge for your services?
Me?
If my neighbor comes to me and says, hey, buddy, I want you to go ahead and wipe and reload my computer.
Oh, that's good.
What
that's
do you charge someone like that? I always think I'm short-selling myself.
I'd say it starts at $50 an hour.
Got it.
Remember, your neighbor is a neighbor. But you're right. You don't also want to give it away for free, especially since, you know, gosh, I don't... friends will come to me and say, I've got malware. Can you help me? And it's like, I don't want to say no, but that's a day of your life lost, maybe more, because they're going to come back. So I'd say $50 an hour is enough sting to make them use your time wisely. And it's probably worth your while then. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our Tech Guy Show brought to you by Gazelle.com. I know a lot of you are looking at new phones right now. There's the new Google phones coming out. There's the iPhones. Maybe you want a Note 7. You're looking at a new phone. Gazelle's a great place to go to sell and to buy. So let me talk about the selling first. They buy used iPhones. They buy used iPads, many computers and tablets. If you've got a Surface Pro 3 and you'd like to get the Surface Pro 4, I think Microsoft might even be coming out with new hardware soon, too. The trick is to go to Gazelle as soon as you think you might be buying new stuff, because they guarantee their offer for 30 days. So the real key is to do it like 29 days before you're going to have the new device. That gives you time to find the new device, shop for it, transfer your data over, make sure it's all working, and then you send it to them. And they guarantee it for 30 days. So even though the price is dropping, prices always are dropping on these things. Every day, they're worth just a little bit less every single day. So get that quote now. Get that quote now. Go to gazelle.com. Find out what your iPhone, your iPad, your Surface, your Kindle, whatever it is that you're getting rid of, find out what it's worth. And you'll be very happy. The payment's very quick. They turn it around. If you forget to delete your data, they'll do that for you. They will send you a check, a PayPal credit, and I've mentioned this before, here's the pro tip. If you buy stuff on Amazon, get the Amazon gift cards, because they bump the value up by 5%, just as a little extra incentive. Gazelle, GAZELLE.com, to sell, but also to buy, because, of course, they've got a lot of great stuff. They take the very best stuff, put it through their rigorous 30-point inspection, and if it is cherry, primo, good to go, they'll sell it to you. And in fact, when you go to Gazelle to buy, whether it's an iPhone, a iPad or a Samsung Galaxy phone. If you go there before you buy, I think you'll be very happy because you can choose the price in effect. You could say, well, I want one that's a little more used, a little less used. They grade them by the quality of it. So if you want, you know, perfect, brand new, practically out of the box, you pay a little more. If you want, I don't care if it's got a little, you know, gentle signs of wear, you pay a little less. They've really got it down. And now they offer financing through Affirm right there at checkout. It's very easy to apply. No wait, instant. They also offer a great 12-month warranty that includes water damage and cracked screens, things like that from Assurance Solutions. They're a full service. To buy, to sell, it's great. You're going to love it. When it's time for a new gadget, G-A-Z-E-L-L-E. Give new life to used electronics. Trade them in for cash or buy certified pre-owned at gazelle.com today. Now back to the tech guy. Hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Yes, hour two of the tech guy program, wherein we talk tech, computers, the internet. Less about computers than it used to be. Although, if you include smartphones and smartwatches, those are computers. Home theater, big screen TVs, there's a computer in those. And all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO, that is the phone number. And the website, most importantly, techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. Jeff. It's moving around. It's a moving target. Jeff in High Point, North Carolina. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. I'll talk to Christopher in a second. What's up?
So, as you know, Amazon just released the second generation of the Dot.
Oh, I'm so excited. I love the Dot.
Yeah, so...
And it's cheaper. It's like $60 now instead of not $80.
No, it's like $50. If you bought it, the first time around, which you probably did, and I bought two,
yeah,
you get a $10 discount.
What?
Yeah. So it can.
Well, I got to get on Amazon.com right now.
They have five for some kind of a, or six for the price of five, 12 for the price of 10.
What? That's crazy. Yeah. So they originally, when they sold the Dot is an Amazon Echo. But it's an Echo where they slice the top off and you just get the top part, the microphones, a little teeny weeny speaker, the functionality of the Echo, but you're expected to add it to your own speakers.
Exactly.
And so I like that because the Echo speaker is not the best in the world.
I agree with you. So I have two of the original Echoes.
Mm-hmm.
And then I bought two Dots, which I waited several months for because you had to, if you remember, you had to be a Prime member and you had to order it through
the Echo.
Right, right.
So okay. I only have one because I didn't know you could get more than one.
Yeah, you could order a maximum of two. You had to order it verbally from, what's her name? My wife calls her Barbie.
Barbie. Hello, Barbie.
So they've introduced the new one. We've talked about the price. It's supposed to have a faster processor, and it now comes in black and white, and it's maybe a millimeter larger or smaller. So, it's almost half the price. It's 45% less. So it sounds like a great thing to have. And because they package them, they suggest that you put one in every room.
Yeah, I have, you know, I went all in on Echo. I have it in the kitchen, the bedroom, the gym. I have one in my office. I love it.
Yeah. So I have, as I said, I have four of them. The only rooms that are missing are bathrooms, and I don't think the finance would
still for that. No need.
But I have a question, and this is a philosophical question. I've heard you say many times that you're maybe Amazon's biggest customer. I respect that you must spend a fortune with them.
Oh, you don't even want to see.
Okay, so tell me, what do you think? So they ship these things out 3 months ago, 4 months ago.
Yeah.
Of course, knowing that they were working on an upgrade that would be 45% less money. The original Dot was only available to the special customers who pay $99 to be a member of the club and blah, blah, blah. And does it seem reasonable that they should have just shipped those things to people, let them pay $90 a piece, knowing that just a few months after they received them, they'd be selling the same thing for half price.
Well, I understand you're being upset about it, but it's kind of the way of the world in the tech industry is the first one of anything is most expensive. And then as they ramp up to mass production, they can make them cheaper. We are early adopters. Yep. And so we take the arrows in our back. We're the ones, and this is my life for the last 25 years, who buy the first of everything and then see the price tumble. Now, that 3 months is pretty quick.
Yeah, that's my issue. It's, you know, I understand with iPhone that every year there'll be a new one.
Yeah, they never lower the price. That's Apple's way of
we're talking about just a couple of months.
Yeah.
And you have to pay $100 to be a member of the club.
No, I know. They're kind of taking advantage of us, aren't they? And yet,
am I out of line or is
you're absolutely right. I don't share your outrage, I guess, because I'm used to it. I'm an abused customer, and I have been for years. And it's like, okay, hit me again. It is true that everybody listening to this should take a lesson from us and not buy the first thing ever, because it always comes out better and cheaper. Discontinue it, and then you're glad you don't have one.
Well, for sure you don't want to be the first in on Amazon.
Remember the Chumby?
No.
This was a beanbag that had a screen in it, and it did all sorts of things. It was kind of like an Echo. It would do all sorts of things. It would wake you up, tell you the weather and stuff. I bought several of those, then they never made them again. And so I'm used to, and they were a lot more than an Echo. I'm used to this. But at the same time, I understand, and 3 months is unusual for a consumer electronics company to, but Amazon isn't your typical consumer electronics company. First of all, these are, you know, this is their first, the Kindles and then the tablets, the Fire Phone, and now this is all. They weren't a hardware company. They were a bookstore, right? Yeah. So this is new to them. I would write, you know, here's what you should do. Write a nasty note to Jeff Bezos, the CEO, and say, this is ridiculous. You're ripping me off. Maybe he'll send you a couple of free ones.
I tweeted him.
Good.
I sent an email.
Good.
To Amazon, and the answer is, that's the way it works, and we look forward to seeing you again soon.
And we own you, baby. How many companies do you know that people pay $100 a year for the privilege of ordering from?
And that's you know, when you go to Sam's or Costco, you also pay for a membership, but they would have made it right.
Yeah, I agree. And Amazon for years was famous for customer service, right? That was their thing. And like every company in technology now, profits seem to be trumping that. And I'm sad to see that. I'm not convinced that Amazon did this, you know, cynically. I really feel like that they had a limited supply. We were guinea pigs, but that's the price you pay for having one 3 months ago. And
I'm not inclined to cut off my nose to spite my face. I will stay a customer.
Well, they know that, right?
The only difference is that I will now purchase from Amazon only when it's convenient for me. The last gadget that I bought was an 8-terabyte Seagate drive, and it was exactly the same price
as
Newegg as it was at Amazon.
Yes.
I bought it from Amazon. Next time...
That's the chink in the armor, because many of us, longtime Amazon customers, always assumed the prices were better at Amazon. And we're learning now is it's not the case.
Yep.
And there is certain convenience to being a Prime member and getting two-day delivery, and it's just fast and easy.
The video's cool. Yeah, man.
Yeah, one click.
I like it.
But I think more and more customers are shopping around and finding what you're finding, which is it isn't always the lowest price.
Yep. So, Leo, speaking of Barbie, when will your daily update begin?
Oh, yes. And we're very excited about that. Amazon is opening up what they call the daily briefing, which is one of the nice features of the Echo. You can, when you get up in the morning, say, you know, read me my flash briefing, and it will deliver. And you can choose from, initially it was just a few sources. Now you can choose from a broader number of sources. And they've asked our Twit podcast network, that's my day job, I guess, my weekday job, to provide content. And we're just waiting for approval. We've created content. Thank you for asking.
How will we know?
You'll see it in your Alexa skill. It will be added. And it may also be you'll get an email. I'm hoping Amazon will email. We missed the first round. There were a bunch of new content providers added a couple of weeks ago, and we had hoped to be part of that, but it was our fault. We didn't get it to them promptly, and so we missed that. But our contact at Amazon is really doing his best to get it in there in the next round. So soon, and I hope you'll enjoy it. And thanks for asking. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's go back to the phones here, and let's see. Sandy from Canyon Country. Is it Country? California. Hi, Sandy.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call, Leo.
It's my pleasure.
I'm in front of the tea house, and I said to my friend that's with me, I hope he gets to us before 2:25 because we have to go in. So,
Yay. You're going to Japan or just to a tea house?
This is an English tea house.
Oh.
Yes, I'm going to Japan. I have a Galaxy, a Samsung Galaxy S5, I think it is.
Okay.
This is after 2 years, yeah. And I want to know, and I have Verizon service, and I want to know how I'm going to be able to use data like Google Maps and text and what you suggest I do.
Yeah. So there are some carriers that are more international friendly than others. Verizon's the least, unfortunately. If you have T-Mobile, for instance, you would have slow but at least free international data and low-cost international calls. Sprint also has a one-world plan that's similar. I think Sprint gives you something like 3 gigabytes a month at high speed and then slows it down. If you had Google...
And the reason I don't have those, Leo, is I live in this area called Sand Canyon that happened to be on fire a few weeks ago.
Oh, dear.
Yes, and the service that works in there is Verizon.
Of course.
Yeah.
I'm saying this for the other people listening because it is very carrier specific. Verizon offers international data, but the last time I checked, their cost was ridiculous. I think it was 250 megabytes, which is hardly anything for a lot, $25. And then it was just complicated and expensive. So you could go, and I would do this. I would go to Verizon and say, I want the international data plan and get the best deal. How long are you going to be there?
2 weeks.
Okay. So the reason you're going to do that is just kind of as an emergency backup. The expensive thing, the most expensive thing is what you just described, which is international data roaming. If you weren't, for instance, to call Verizon and say, I'm going to be overseas, they would charge you the most absurd amount of money. I've seen people come back with iPhones and $10,000 bills after a couple of weeks because international data roaming is hideously expensive. And there's just, you know, you got to buy an international plan. And I would treat this as an emergency only international plan because 250 megs, you're going to run through that quickly. The good news is, for instance, Google Maps just got updated. So they have an offline setting and your hotel will have Wi-Fi. You want to use Wi-Fi whenever you can. If you at the hotel, at the coffee shop, whenever you can. And in Japan, there'll be Wi-Fi in a lot of the places, almost everywhere you go. So that's going to be free or cheap. And so you'll normally what I do when I get overseas, and I'm, by the way, planning a trip too in a couple of weeks, is I turn off data roaming. That's in a setting in your phone. All Android phones and iPhones have that setting. Turn that off. That's the thing that will cost you. And that the reason is you can't be sure. It's not just when you launch Google Maps. Your mail program every half an hour is getting the mail. Stuff's going on all the time that uses data, and you don't know, and you don't even know what your bill's going to be till you get home, and you go, holy shamamagong. And that's exactly the word you're going to use. And so turning off data roaming will eliminate that. But I still want you to have some international data in case, here's what happens. You go wandering around Kyoto and it's beautiful and you kind of lose, you know, track of where you are. Now you're lost. The ability to turn on data roaming on your phone and say, get me home is worth it. So this is their emergency plan. Best to use Wi-Fi only. If you still want to use data, there are ways to do that. For instance, you can get a data plan when you get to Japan. You could buy a little Wi-Fi data card that uses 3G. You usually rent them, and you'll pay, you know, say $50 for unlimited data on that. And it's local data. And then you still keep international data roaming turned off on your phone, but you use that as the Wi-Fi. And now you have Wi-Fi in your pocket. And everywhere you go, you have access to data on your phone. So that's probably the best plan. You can learn before you go about what's available at a wonderful website I recommend all the time. It's called Prepaid with Data. It's a wiki, so people, when they come back from countries, update it. So it's a very up-to-date stuff. You can actually look at Japan and see what options are there, what Japanese carriers you could use, where you would go. Chances are you get to Narita at the airport, and there'll be someone selling those. But if not, then you can, you know, go down to the phone store or the post office. It just depends, and get it. Prepaid with Data, easiest way to find that is just Google Prepaid with Data. It's .wikia.com. It's a long URL. So just Google Prepaid with Data or look at our website, because we'll put a link there at techguylabs.com. It's okay. Good to go pre-armed. The sad thing is Verizon's not the best choice. What I'm going to do, I have, of course, phones on all carriers. My wife is Verizon, so I'm going to pop her Verizon SIM out of her phone and put a T-Mobile SIM in for her. I have a spare T-Mobile SIM just for that. And you could do that. You could arrange to have a one-month-only T-Mobile account and do that here in the States. And any phone on Verizon, the SIM card is unlocked if you have a modern Verizon phone that supports LTE, because Verizon had to make that deal with the FCC. So that's the good thing about being a Verizon customer. So I just take her Verizon iPhone. You'll be able to do this with your Galaxy as well, I think. It depends on what model, how recent. You said it might be an S4 or an S5.
Five or six.
Six for sure you could do it. I'm not sure if five's, I'm pretty sure five. If it has a SIM slot, then it does support LTE.
It does.
Yeah, okay.
It does.
So those are unlocked. So that's the good news. They're not carrier locked. That means you could also, when you get to Japan, buy a SIM for it. But the problem with that is you lose your phone number. Suddenly you have a Japanese phone number. That may not be the best solution. I like the idea of keeping my phone, keeping my phone number, keeping my SIM in there, buying a tiny amount of emergency data, and then using Wi-Fi.
Okay. I will take your suggestion, and I appreciate it very much. Thank you.
Hey, have a great trip. I'm jealous. I've been to a little bit of Japan, but never the big cities, and I'm dying to go. Where are you going?
We're going to Tokyo, Kyoto, Osaka.
Oh, sun's wonderful. Have a great time.
I'm excited.
Yeah.
You too. I want to go where you're going. Are you going to Scandinavia?
I'm going to, yes, and St. Petersburg and Estonia and Riga.
I've been to St. Petersburg and Helsinki, but I haven't done the rest. So we'll have to...
we'll compare notes when we get back.
Yeah.
Thanks for calling. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Have a great trip.
Very much.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm fortunate. I have a Google Fi phone. Google has done a deal now with carriers all over the world so that it's a local phone, in effect, that you pay the same whether you're in the U.S. or Germany, or there's, I think, 19 countries. You have to check which countries. So I'll be bringing my Nexus 6P with a Google Fi SIM, and I pay $20 for voice and unlimited text, and I pay $10 a gigabyte for data, and that price is the same worldwide. It's the same in, I'm hoping it'll be the same in Scandinavia and Russia. I don't know about Russia. It's always, this is a good thing to plan ahead of time. Visit that website, Prepaid with Data. Check your carrier. It's always a good thing to plan ahead. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. There he is, Chris Marquardt, our digital photography guru. He's my sensei. He's the guy who, more importantly than anything, gets me out there taking pictures and inspires me each and every week. Hi, Chris. Good to talk to you.
Hi there. How are you?
Chris joins us from just outside Hanover, Germany. Actually, we're pre-recording this one because right now he's out with the ice floe in Greenland, where he's taking a bunch of photographers out for a photography workshop. I hope you're having a good time. Well, you don't know yet.
Well, at this point, when this show gets episode gets released, I will be on the next tour, which is in Donegal in Ireland.
What a life.
So, yeah.
You are smart. This is good. This is how you make your living, right? This is great.
And it's fun.
You travel, you take pictures, you meet great
people. Travel, take photographers with me.
And
teach photography. I mean, these are workshop tours. These are not just photo tours where I take people to space to places and then just let him take photos. No, if someone wants to learn about certain techniques or how to take photos of this and that, that's what I'm there for. I'm there to teach as well. Yeah.
If you want to go on one of his workshops, he leads them all year long, and they're great. DiscoverTheTopFloor.com is the website. You'll also find his photos there. I imagine some Greenland photos will emerge and some Donegal, Ireland photos
definitely
in the near future. Meanwhile, you continue on your series giving us photographic superpowers.
Secret superpowers of photography. And we talked about celestial bodies, the sun and the moon. Let's round that off with stars.
Ah.
Star photography.
Ooh.
And then those are fancy, right? You look at them and you go, wow, how do they do that? How does this work? And again, there are a few tips and tricks and rules that can get you through that and can make you a bit of an astrophotographer.
So I love the ones with star trails, you know, whether you could see the motion.
That's your first decision. That's the first decision you want to make when you shoot stars. Do I want star trails or do I want fixed stars in the sky? And trails are, well, the easiest way to take star trails is put the camera on a tripod, point it upwards, and open, you use a remote release that you can actually lock down and then just expose for, well, as long as the battery in the camera lets you do it.
So stars tend to move in a circle because the Earth's spinning, right?
Exactly, yes.
So how long does it take? I mean, to get a full circle would be 24 hours, I guess.
Would be 24 hours, yes.
Okay.
So a quarter of a circle is six hours.
Okay,
good. Yeah. But then most camera, you need a camera battery to keep the shutter open. So
right.
Some cameras will just run out of battery when that happens. But that is, a lot of people actually do it in a different way. They use a lot of individual pictures. So they will take, I don't know, 20-second pictures, 50-second, 1-minute, 2-minute pictures, and then stack them. That's what it's called. And there's a piece of software, and there are some advantages of doing that because you can, for example, make a video out of those, and you can kind of show the motion of the stars. It is somewhat better for noise in the picture because when you expose very long, you get digital noise in the picture, which is not going to be the case as much there. You get to remove things that are in the way, like let's say an airplane streak in the sky. If you have an airplane coming through, and that'll maybe ruin the picture. So with individual pictures, you can just take those individual pictures out, and it will still stack nicely. And you also can easier save problems, like when after an hour you trip over the tripod, you're not going to ruin the entire picture. And there's a piece of software, a piece of freeware out there called StarStax, StarStax. She's, I think, a German programmer, and that's free software for the Mac, for Windows, and for Linux. And that will give you a lot of options on how to stack those together and how to even to fill gaps in between those individual pictures so you have a nice continuous star trail. So star trails are a bit of an art, but give it a try at least. Try. I mean, the first star trail picture I took, I literally laid the camera on a table, like just on its back, opened the shutter, And then just
wow.
let it go for an hour, and I had my first star trail picture. So
wide angle or telephoto? You probably want wide angle, right?
In that case, I did a wide angle because you have more stars in the picture. But the other kind of picture is the fixed stars, where you have like a big star field, let's say the Milky Way. By the way, shooting a picture of the Milky Way, you have to be in a place that doesn't have a lot of light pollution. Like from a city, no way. The Milky Way is not going to be visible. But if you're out in places in the desert somewhere, that will then be possible. And now the next problem is, how do you avoid the star trails? Because you don't want any. And the star trails happen quicker than you think. Like if you take your, let's say, your 50 millimeter lens on the camera and you shoot for 2 minutes, you'll have star trails.
Really?
It's that quick. So
they don't look like they're moving, but they really are.
Well, you are. So
well, actually, you're right. They're not moving. You are.
Stars will be moving.
Yeah.
And there's a rule that's called the Well, there's a few different versions of that, but I usually go with the, what's called the 600 rule, which is, well, it kind of depends on your focal length. You know, when you shoot with a wide-angle lens, you can move the camera a bit more and you don't really see how it moves. When you have a long telephoto lens on it, a little move, a little motion of the camera will really shake the picture. So the longer the focal length, the shorter the time that you shoot. And the 600 rule means take 600 divided by your focal length. That's the number in seconds that you can shoot without getting too much motion in the stars. So let's say you're shooting with a 50 millimeter lens. 600 divided by 50, that's 12 seconds, and you will still be okay. 600 divided by, let's say we have a wide angle lens, a 14 millimeter lens, that will give you over 40 seconds that you can expose without getting too much motion in the stars. And of course, to get enough light from the stars with shutter speeds that are anywhere between, let's say, 10 and 50 seconds, depending on your focal length, you will need a higher ISO. That's kind of one of the drawbacks. You will have to shoot at a higher ISO to make this work, to have enough light register on your photo. Or here's another trick, and that the real professional astrophotographers use that. They use a tracker. They use something that they actually put between the camera and the tripod, and it's a little mechanical device, usually electrified, that turns the camera and it evens out the motion of the Earth. So you will have the camera move opposite to the Earth. So in relation to your camera, the stars won't be moving. So you can expose for at least several minutes without having the stars move. And then you can shoot with a lower ISO and still get amazing shots there. But those trackers, even the entry-level ones, will still set you back a few hundred dollars, so they're not cheap.
Oh, and this is all of John's beautiful images of star trails. He does. He's been doing this on film.
Yeah, this is from the.
I want to do. I was thinking ISS would be kind of fun to do, space station.
Well, ISS is just one streak
light
in the sky.
But you at least know
it's not really that interesting.
I know, you're right. Look at that, nice one, John. These are beautiful.
I love those that have a foreground where you get silhouettes of trees and things.
Yeah.
That really gives it some context.
Yeah. I could just do this at our backyard. What fun. Chris Marquardt, the photo guy. DiscoverTheTopFloor.com. Don't forget, next week we review our assignment, the word fly. You've got one more week to upload an image. Doesn't have to be a fancy one. Can be from a camera phone as well as a fancy camera. But get it on Flickr. Join the Tech Guy group. Post it there. And we'll look forward to sharing it with the world next week. Three of your best. Thank you, Chris.
Absolutely.
Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. I am Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Back to the phones we go. And Daryl is back from Santa Rosa. Hi, Daryl. You there?
I'm here, Leo.
I'm sorry about that. I don't know what happened, but I'm glad we got you back.
Yeah, me too. Thank you.
What can I do for you?
This is all local time. I've been a follower of your for at least 15 years. I used to go to your studio in San Francisco.
Oh, yeah, the old Tech TV studios.
Exactly.
Oh, and I think that's neat.
Called GSN or something else in those old days. And I had to switch cable companies to get you, and now I have you online, radio.
You know, this was the smartest thing I ever did is get out of the cable TV business and into the internet TV business. Because now you can watch me everywhere in the world. You don't have to have a deal.
Everywhere, yeah. And I love it. Yeah. I really appreciate your show. I'm older than you. I've had a company in Marin for 25 years.
Well, we're neighbors. What do you do down there?
Well, Marin, I'm not going to give myself a plug, but a computer company that I do networking for hospitals, government, everything.
All right. So you're an IT professional.
I would hope so, yes.
Good. Well, any IT guy worth his salt is humble, right? You don't want a cocky IT guy. You want one who has been beat up by IT and knows his limits. So good.
Exactly. And you know, I've been around so long. I have so many clients that I had to fire because they were just such a pain in the, you know what?
Yeah.
It's been a wonderful journey, and you've helped me follow.
Nice. I do. I have to say I have the utmost respect for anybody in that business because it's so hard. It's so hard, and it's not the client's fault. They're suffering. Everybody's suffering.
Exactly. And you know, I'm retired now. You probably will be one day, too, but you have a wonderful show.
I have alimony. I'll never be retired. This is a lifelong profession.
Yeah, it is. Until the day I die, I suppose.
Two kids in college, I'll be here for a long time.
And I'll go out with a smile on my face, for sure.
Well, I like what I'm doing, so it's okay. What can I do for you?
Well, there was no really question. Although I saw in the background of your studio, you had a globe.
I still have it. Isn't that the coolest thing?
Floating around in a cubicle.
Yeah.
Where did you get it? I want one.
I got it from my dad for Father's Day a couple of months ago.
Wow.
And I was looking for a Father's Day gift. My father is a retired paleontologist. He's an earth scientist. And he's always loved maps and globes. And I was really searching high and low. It's hard to buy something for a guy who has everything.
It's very, very unique. Yeah.
I found this. It's not cheap, although they have a variety of them. It's from a company called MOVA, M-O-V-A, and I liked it so much that I bought one for myself as well. It is it's a globe. They make a variety of things. It's from MOVA, M-O-V-A, international.com.
Okay, I wrote it down.
Yeah, they make the one I have, I think is $300, but they make less expensive ones. The idea is these globes are floating in a cleverly designed liquid. It's of two densities, so the globe floats in the middle. And then it is also light-powered, so when light hits it, it starts to rotate. And
yeah,
even,
I saw that. Is it like a hologram?
No, it's an actual physical globe.
Wow.
And what's really neat about it, they went the extra mile because, of course, in order for it to really be accurate, and I wouldn't give my dad a globe that was inaccurate,
right,
it has to rotate.
It has to be real time,
east,
of course.
Well, it's not real time. I mean, it's a little faster, but it's east to west, right? The sun has to always rise in the east and set in the west. And so they've put magnets in it so that it's aware of the Earth's magnetic field, and it rotates in the proper direction. So
amazing.
It is kind of a cool little device, and I think Dad liked it. I certainly love mine. And they have a variety. I bought the one with the satellite cover, but they have a more traditional globe, and they also have other heavenly bodies. So,
it's pretty cool. I think I will purchase one.
I love it.
$300 is worth it for 10 years.
You can, they're less expensive if you get the globes that are kind of in round. I think they're closer to $100. I think they're a lot less expensive.
Excellent. But
I just love the idea, you know, and it's kind of cool.
Yeah, I could see it.
Yeah.
You just put it up there, and I can see it.
Yeah.
I really appreciate your show. I love your. I would like to be able to attend one of your.
Well, you're just up the road a piece, and we have an open studio. We always have visitors, and you're more than welcome. Just come on down. Just email tickets at twit.tv.
You're like 15 minutes away.
I know.
Okay.
Come down. We'd love to meet you, Daryl. We'd love to have you in studio, and that's true for everybody. I know it's crazy. I don't know many radio stations or TV stations that have open doors, but I don't know. I like having an audience, I guess. So if you email us, tickets at twit.tv. We're located near Santa Rosa, which is where you are, but we're in Petaluma is the name of the town, Petaluma, California. Small town at the foot of the Sonoma and Napa wine country. So if you're on your way up to the wine country from San Francisco, we're about an hour north of San Francisco, and we'd love to have you stop by. We always welcome visitors. Trevor, Hawthorne, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Trevor. Trevor, come on over. Trevor in Hawthorne, come on down. All right. Well, I guess Trevor fell asleep here. I put him on hold, and Kim Schaffer, our phone answerer, will wake him up. Gail in Covina, California. I bet Gail's awake. Hi, Gail.
Hi.
Hi.
Oh, I'm so glad I got on.
I'm so glad. I'm sorry it took so long. I appreciate your patience.
Hey, I have been paying for my Verizon high-speed internet for over 2 years. I just haven't been brave enough to axe it. Because I have something else now that has been much, much better. But
wait a minute, you have two connections now?
Yeah.
Well, that's not a bad idea, given...
And now that all my friends are having, you know, unbelievable trouble with...
Frontier, who, you know, Verizon sold all their customers to Frontier.
Yeah, and I thought, why am I paying for this?
Yeah, cancel it.
But here's why I'm paying for it, because I've got a slew of emails. And so here's what I need to know.
Yeah.
What would you say, what's your recommendation for the, you know, some of the better companies that I can just get a personal,
yes,
isn't business, just personal, yeah, domain name.
Yeah.
I know how that all works, but, and something that's not too expensive.
Yeah. So I'll give you some good choices. So right now you're hosted by Yahoo Mail, right? Or not?
Well,
AOL, what? That's right. AOL, that's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, let's get off AOL.
Yeah.
That's not, now, of course, you're going to, I wouldn't get rid of your AOL account. I'd keep it as long as you can. Even if you cancel Verizon or Frontier, I think you get to keep the email for at least a few months.
Okay.
And then what you'll do is you'll have an auto responder on there saying, hey, thanks for the email. I've moved. My new address is.
Mm.
And you've got the right idea in mind, because what you'd like to do is be able to, from now on, move, hop like a frog on a lily pad to whoever the best provider is without having to tell everybody you know, oh, I've got a new address.
Right.
So by buying a vanity domain name, you can guarantee that.
Mm-hmm.
You can always have, you know, you could say my email is gailbeachgirl.com or whatever it is. And that way you control it and you just tell it to go to wherever you want. You can use Google Mail and register at a domain registrar. I use hover.com.
Oh, okay.
And you just tell hover.com forward everything that comes to gailbeachgirl.com. Just forward it to this unknown, by the way, make it an obscure Google Mail address and it'll all go there. And then you go to Google Mail. I'll give you one other choice. That I really like. It's called Fastmail, and that's actually my email provider. They're not free. Google Mail's free. But Fastmail is excellent. It's fastmail.com. They do the domain name thing, too. So get the domain name, get a good email provider, and then never look back. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. The Tech Guy podcast brought to you today by our fine sponsor, Quicken Loans, the folks that do Rocket Mortgage. A mortgage solution from the 21st century. Isn't that our century? Why are you going back to the 19th century when you need to refi or borrow? Why are you going to the guy? This was my mortgage broker. Had the sheaf of, you know, really cheap, thin paper, poorly printed. And every day they would print out all the rates, you know, on the LIBOR and all the rates and the Fed and all the different lenders and how much they... And he flipped through this to find my loan. Now, that is not the best way to get that done. Not to mention I had to actually go to him. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans, so much better. First of all, you never have to leave the house. You never have to get off the couch. You can use your phone or your tablet to do this. You are going to get a custom solution that's just right for you. And all the paperwork, everything you need to do, they will do over on the internet, including pay stubs and bank statements, all that stuff. Boom, boom, boom. It's easy. It's fast. It's really the fastest way to get a refi or to get a home loan or to get pre-qualified for a home loan. Rocket Mortgage. And it's from the best, Quicken Loans. QuickenLoans.com/techguy. Check it out. If it's time to buy, time to refi. QuickenLoans.com/techguy. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLSConsumerAccess.org. Number 3030. They're an equal housing lender, of course. And we thank them. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans for their support of the Tech Guy Show. QuickenLoans.com/techguy. Hey, hey, hey. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches. You know all that stuff. Stuff with chips in it. And lots of calls. So let me get right to them. Ray in L.A. Thank you for your patience, Ray. Leo Laporte here.
How you doing? I've got a Wi-Fi issue. I have Time Warner cable, and I get the Wi-Fi from that. And I have a Sony Android TV that's a year old, and I lose the connection between the TV and the Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
Usually I can just plug it in and unplug the TV and plug it back in, and I get it.
Well, that's interesting. That tells me it's the television more than the Wi-Fi, right?
That also happens with my laptop.
Yeah, so it's, well, that's interesting. So how old is your router?
It's probably a few years old.
So that's one thing that of late I've kind of become aware of, which is we all just figure, well, what can go, a router should last, you know, forever. But what I'm finding is that after a couple of years, they tend to wear out and become less reliable. And one of the chief symptoms of that is dropping. So rebooting the router brings it back. There may be, this sounds like though, since the TV rebooting works, and does the same thing work with your laptop? If you like turn Wi-Fi off and on again, does it rejoin?
No, for the laptop, I have to go reboot the router.
You do reboot the router. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Well, so here's the difference. If you have to reboot the router, probably time for a new router. And what happens is every few years, Wi-Fi improves. You're going to get an AC router. They've just gotten better and better and better. I love the Asus routers. Lately, I've been using the Eero, much more expensive, but they solve a lot of Wi-Fi problems, the Eero. There are some competitors coming out. We're still waiting for the Loom, L-U-M-E. That's from Amazon. And then, is it Loom or Luma? I think L-U-M-A. And then the Plume, P-L-U-M-E, confusingly enough. That's going to be around Christmas. Ubiquiti makes similar ideas. These are mesh routers. They're designed for large areas with bad connectivity in the edges. If that's not the issue, if it's a small place and you're not having trouble getting a signal everywhere in it, getting a new router, a single new router with better antenna, better power might help. The nice thing about the Asus C3200 is three tri-band, has 2.4, but it also has 2.5 gigahertz bands. 5 is less crowded, and so less subject to interference from other people's Wi-Fi. That's one of the things that's changed over the last few years. Everybody's got Wi-Fi. There's dozens of signals everywhere. So that may be what your TV might be doing, is jumping promiscuously to what it thinks is a better signal. And that can happen. And that might be fixed just by having a stronger signal from your router. The other thing is that what we call the TTL, or time to live. What happens with DHCP, which is the thing that assigns an address to the device like the TV, is that it only is good for a certain amount of time. And it is possible that your TV gets the first thing when it comes on, and then after an hour or two, is it a pretty consistent length of time?
I haven't figured that out yet.
If it is, then it may be that the lease runs out and the TV doesn't properly reacquire an IP address. And that would be consistent with what you've just described, because turning the TV off and on again would tell it, okay, get back on the network, get a new address. So if every 2 hours the TV loses a signal, then you can look in the router, this is set in the router, and increase the time to live, or the least, what's called least time for DHCP.
Okay.
Sometimes.
One quick question.
Yes.
Go ahead.
No, that's all. And certainly try that. But I think a new router, people don't get new routers. And I think often that fixes a multitude of problems.
Great. When I look at which Wi-Fi signals, it'll give my router my network name, and then it'll give my network name with a 5G.
Yeah.
What's the difference, and when do you use
it? That's the different bands I was talking about. Wi-Fi originally started on 2.4 gigahertz band because that was an unregulated, wide-open band. Baby monitors use it. Some cordless phones use it. Lots of stuff uses it because it's not regulated by the FCC. And that was a smart move, by the way. It created a very dynamic, innovative era that we wouldn't have Wi-Fi if the FCC hadn't said anybody can use 2.4. But the problem is it's very crowded. So there is a second band, the 5 gigahertz band. It is less crowded. It's often used for entertainment devices, but it has a problem, which is the higher with any radio signal, the higher the frequency, when you get in the microwaves like this, it bounces off stuff. So 5 gigahertz will bounce off more, will bounce off walls and stuff in a way that 2.4 won't. Of course, 2.4 is also microwave frequency. In fact, your microwave oven is usually at 2.4. So it bounces off things too. And you want that in a microwave oven. You don't want the waves penetrating the walls of the oven. You don't want that so much in Wi-Fi, but that's what we got. So if you see a 5G appended to your ID, your SSID, that means this is the 5 gigahertz band. You have a dual band router. I actually have, as I mentioned with Asus, a tri-band router. So I'll see the name of my Wi-Fi access point is Winehouse. I'll see Winehouse 5G, and I'll see Winehouse 5G-2, which is the second one. That's good to have because then you can switch between them. But you'll notice if you're at all distant or there's walls between you and the router that the 2.4 gigahertz gives you more bars generally than the 5 because it's not bouncing off walls.
Okay, thanks a lot.
There you go. You got the full everything you need to know about Wi-Fi and probably a lot more than you wanted to know. We're going to see some innovation here. I think Eero is just the beginning. Eero, Luma, Plume, Ubiquiti. These are just the beginnings of kind of a revolution because when Wi-Fi first came out, you were the only one. You go now almost anywhere. You'll see 10, 15. If you're in an apartment building, you'll see 20 or 30 Wi-Fi signals. And that causes congestion. They're really in any given frequency, like 2.4 gigahertz. They say there's 11 channels, but really the way it works is only 3 effective channels because you use the sidebands. So you really only have three channels you can use. And if there's 20 signals, you're going to have lots of other people on that on any channel you choose, and that can cause interference. And worse, promiscuity. Yes, promiscuity will result. Your TV may say, hey, Joe next door's got a much better signal than I do. Let me go try that one. But of course, you don't know Joe's password. You don't have access to Joe's network. So your TV suddenly stops working. It's happier, but it stops working. So that's another problem. And that actually comes from, that's more part of the zero config specification. The theory being, you shouldn't have to configure these devices. They should do it themselves. But they're dumb. Now, Christopher in Miami. Hi, Christopher. Leo Laporte. Haven't talked to you in ages. Good to talk to you again.
Hey, thank you for taking my call, Leo. How are you?
My pleasure. Thank you for hanging on.
Well, you know, that's what I do.
You never give up.
You know, it's like John Panette, the great comedian. He passed away in 2010, says, I'm crawling to that buffet.
And now we know how he died.
Well, actually, he died of, I think it was his heart and liver gave out. Well, he was a big guy anyways. He was a fullback, 300 pounds.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, you know.
I always worry, like, I'm going to, you know, maybe I'll die of, you know, some unknown thing. And I could have smoked and ate all the candy bars I want. And I didn't, you know.
Right.
You don't know. What is going to kill you, you don't know ahead of time. So you don't get to enjoy life. But, Chris, we only have a minute left, so.
Yeah. Okay, so I have two concerns. One, I've tried to contact Craig Mullaney.
Yeah.
His app for iOS is really, I've had enough. I can't seem to get it to work properly okay, there's that.
That's the Twit app for the network, and Craig is in the chat room, Houdini7, ask him.
Okay. Then the other thing is this, I have the Apple Music service. So I pay $9.99 a month for it. I asked Apple, you know, are you going to do a year ago? And I'm reading an article in Apple News recently, and boom, all of a sudden comes this card. For $29 and $99, you can get this gift card for Apple Music. So I've called corporate office. They don't have an answer. Why is it I can't get Apple Music for a year through their iTunes on my Mac computer? I can only get,
Chris,
you know.
Chris, you're asking me why Apple does anything? Apple does whatever they want. That's Apple. That's the nature of Apple. I don't know. I know. Wish I did. Wish I had their money. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You are, well, you know who you are. You're Archie in Hawthorne, California. Hi, Archie.
Hi, Leo. How's it going?
It's great. Thanks for hanging on.
Okie doke. Call sign is Kilo Delta 6. Oscar Lima Hotel, commonly called the Old Lucky Ham.
I love it.
Since day one, since your beginning, I'm an old computer guy. an old radio guy, been doing it since they had drum and core memory.
Holy cow!
About 6 years ago, I went down to TRW swap meet down here in Los Angeles area, and I saw a guy with a Epson 680 or 660 with a little Velcroed bunch of ink bottles on the side.
Yeah.
And a strap went up over the side and into the center.
It's an aftermarket adaptation. Yeah.
Was that the beginning of the E-Tank?
No, so, but I, you know what? Maybe Epson was inspired by that. I've seen the same thing. These are aftermarket. This is somebody who's retrofitted his inkjet printer with ink bottles. I've seen that. Photographers often do that with the black and white printers. I've seen them do it for years. I'm sure Epson saw that and said, you know, we ought to make a product that does that. But the EcoTank is pretty new. It's less than a year old. It was a brave thing. I should say they are a sponsor. They sponsor the show with their EcoTank ads. They were pretty brave to do it. I'll say that off the record, not as part of an ad. Because, as you know, the EcoTank printers cost more up front. You know, the way they get you with printers is they don't charge much up front, but they get it all back in the ink cartridges. And Epson realized that people aren't dumb. They know what's going on. They understand the give away the razor, make it up for the in the blades model. And they said, I wonder if we did it differently, if we made the ink less expensive and we put it in a tank, if people would be smart enough to understand why the printer costs more up front but less over the life of the printer. If they're, you know, we call it homo economus, the economic man. And they were so nervous about this, they didn't release it in the U.S. They started in Brazil. And they were shocked. They really thought the consumers would go, I'm not going to buy that. The sticker shock would kill it. If they flew off the shelves, they couldn't keep them in stock because people are smart. They did the math. Epson didn't really even have to push it very hard. They got it. So, you know, I think that bodes well, not just for Epson, but in general for the computer industry and for us as users. We're not as dumb as you might think. And we're not talking ho-hos and ding-dongs here. And we're not buying chips at the store. We're buying chips for our computers. And so I think that technology consumers, I think, maybe are a little smarter. So, yeah, Archie, you saw something that was a preview, but a third-party aftermarket adaptation. Epson did not sell those. And I've seen them before, too, myself. And I always thought it was a great idea. I think I saw it first in Australia, of all places, a few years, maybe 8 years ago. Jose is in Modesto. Hi, Jose. Oh, by the way, Archie, W6TWT73. Thanks for calling. Hi, Jose.
Hi. Hi, Leo.
What can I do for you?
Yeah, I have a quick question. Well, first of all, congratulations on your new experience and everything.
Thank you.
I love the idea of you having a baseball bat behind you.
That baseball bat is a Louisville Slugger from the Louisville plant, and it says, congratulations on your 100th episode. So let's see. This is episode 1,326. So you can tell I've had that bat for a while. I've gotten to the point now where I don't really commemorate any episodes that end in 20s. It's got to have 30s to really to celebrate. What can I do? Thank you, Jose. What can I do for you?
Well, I have an issue since a couple of days with my Android tablet. It's a Samsung tablet, and I restarted it, and now it's stuck at the Samsung splash logo.
Uh-oh.
I assume it has an issue, and I can't figure out what.
So there, the next step is to kind of put it into recovery mode. Android devices all can be put in. It's actually, for this matter, so can iPhones. All devices. If you really think about it, a phone or tablet, it's just a computer. It's a computer with kind of a different configuration, but it's just a computer. And as you know, there's a few things you can do with a computer. You can turn it off and on again. That's a restart. You can reset it. Most computers have a reset button. In the case of iPhones, for instance, holding the home key and the on-off button at the same time for long enough, we'll reset it. Screen will go blank, and then a white Apple will pop up. And there's a recovery mode. Apple calls it their DFU mode. on Android devices, it puts you into the recovery screen, which gives you some options. So the next step for you with that tablet is to go into recovery mode. Actually, I would try a reset first. But what you're going to want to do is go online and look up that tablet and look up, you know, the name of the tablet, the model number of the tablet, and maybe even more than like Samsung Galaxy S2. But if you know, and you may not know this, but the like the N910U, the really the model number of it, that will be most helpful. But Google that and reset, and then Google that and recovery mode. Typically on an Android device, recovery mode is started. You turn the phone all the way off. Then you press and hold the on button and the volume down button. In some cases, it's the volume up button. And you hold it until it vibrates, and then you let go. And it will go into this mode, which you will say, whoa, what's going on here, that has a menu. And there's a number of things you can do in recovery mode. You can wipe it and restart, and you may have to do that. It may be that just the software, the firmware got corrupted. That's why it can't boot. That's what's happening, by the way. It's stuck on the logo. It can't boot. But it may. I would start maybe with wiping the caches. You have a data cache. You can wipe that. And so you can kind of fix it slowly. Go through the menu items until you get it to a point where you can restart it. Worst case scenario, with almost all Android devices, Samsung sometimes not, but this is again where you Google search it. And you'll probably find the answer on the XDA developers forum, xda-developers.com. You could download a copy of the current firmware for that model. Google, for instance, puts those files up, images of the phones. Some other companies do. Oftentimes, though, it's an enthusiast who has taken the image off of his tablet and put it up on the XDA developer site. And then instructions on how to restore that firmware, which usually involves connecting the tablet to a computer, running some software on the computer, getting the USB connection working, and then blasting the firmware back onto the tablet. Usually that's not required, but it is awesome. Often a possibility in an Android device. Samsung, at least with their phones, is a little funny because they have this Knox security model. They don't want their phones to be hackable, and so they put up some roadblocks, none of them perfect, none of them 100%, but roadblocks to keep you from doing this. Because, of course, once you've done that, you could put third-party firmware on there, you could root the phone, and then it wouldn't be secure anymore. We wouldn't know, you know, Samsung and users wouldn't know what's going on inside the phone. But I think the tablets are okay. So the best bet, XDA developers, Google your tablet, find out how to do recovery. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls right after this. Hi, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We are talking high tech with you and Trevor. He's on the line from Hawthorne, California. Hi, Trevor.
Hey, good afternoon.
We woke you up. We got you. Good. You probably wandered off, as many people do. We keep you on hold so long.
No, I was in my storage, and I have no cell service up there, so I don't want to take the phone up there and lose it and not be able to get you again.
Perfect.
So I put on speakerphone, left it in the car, and ran up to my storage. You came on quicker than you did last week. So.
I know how that is. We only have 6 lines. We try not to keep people on hold for too long, but I am such a windbag.
You're incredible is what you are. So
most hosts go through calls lots faster than me. What can I do for you?
I called in last week and you're fantastic. And I was talking about TVs. I don't know if you remember, you go through a lot of people, but you recommended the Vizio.
Don't tell me you bought it and you hate it.
Here's the thing with Vizio, and they're the only manufacturer doing it. They're not including a tuner with it. So there's no...
Right. You didn't tell me you need a tuner. Most of the time, people don't need tuners because they have cable or satellite.
Well, I don't have cable.
So you want to come from over the air.
Yeah. So I did return it, and I went for the Samsung, which is a better picture and
good.
A better tuner.
Good. Okay.
Yeah. So
nothing wrong with that. Generally, if you'd called me and asked me that, I would have said, you need a tuner, go get a Channel Master, because that is an over-the-air TiVo-style device that you can then use as your tuner and as a DVR.
Okay.
And that'll work with any TV. The reason they unbundle the tuner is most people don't need a tuner.
Yeah. But But I thought of this on the same note. I thought more people were cutting cable and trying to go over the air. So
Some people are, but often when they cut cable, really what they're doing is getting most of their TV over the internet.
Okay.
Yeah. So in any event, I think that that's a trend that's going to continue. One of the ways Vizio keeps their costs low is not bundling in things people don't use. And I apologize. I just had no idea you wanted an over-the-air tuner.
I guess I didn't specify. But
you can buy those, as I said. You can, and Channel Master is a good compromise because then you get the tuner and a DVR. But I think that Samsung's excellent. You're happy with it, right?
Yeah, they said it was a better picture. It was brighter. So
good.
I think I got kind of the top of the line.
Nice. Which one did you get?
Well, the 6300 series. I forget.
Nice. No, that's very good. Yeah, I like Samsung a lot. Yeah.
The 50-inch, and I paid 150 more than the Vizio, but I mean, the picture is supposed to be outstanding. While I have you on the line, I wanted to ask you, is it a gimmick again between UHD and SUHD, super ultra high def? Is that just a letter difference?
It's not different at all. It's okay. Samsung's UHD.
Okay.
So there is a UHD spec. That is the future ultra-high def. It's really 4K. UHD will include HDR. Samsung launched their SUHD TVs before the UHD spec was official, was set. So they used SUHD. As far as I know, it is compatible with UHD, even though it came out earlier. So you got... probably got a good deal on it last year's Samsung if you got an SUHD.
Okay. I mean, it's a significant. I mean, it's a significant.
Oh, yeah. You got a 4K TV. No, that's a huge difference. Yeah. Yeah. As long as what you want in anybody shopping today is going to want a TV that supports the UHD. What is it called? UHD Premium, I think, is what it's called, or UHD. I'll have to look it up. You want that standard because that's what, in the long run, is the future of television. And it includes more than 4K, which is what the UHD stands for, ultra high definition. The UHD standard also includes HDR, high dynamic range. It's UHD or Ultra HD Premium. That's the spec. Now only sets that came out this year will have it. They probably will be high priced, but that going forward, if you're buying a TV, that'd be my recommendation. Is look for that. Maybe now it doesn't matter so much because you don't have any 4K content. There's very limited, even more limited HDR content. But your next Blu-ray player, for instance, will be a UHD Premium Blu-ray player. And movies will start coming out. I mean, I have that, and I have a UHD Blu-ray player. The Xbox One S, the new Xbox, has it. And, boy, you look at – I bought Mad Max. I bought an IMAX movie about space. I bought The Martian. And the difference is palpable. It's really – not just higher res, but the high dynamic range means the blacks are blacker, the whites are whiter. There's a broader range between black and white, and that makes a big difference. Ryan Anaheim, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Ryan.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm well. What can I do for you?
I have a question about my iPhone 4.
Okay.
It's currently, how it's CDM and CDMA and GSM compatible. Well, every time I put a SIM card in there, such as like T-Mobile, it does not read my T-Mobile SIM card.
Yeah. It's a very old phone, and it's not GSM or CDMA that you want now. It's LTE.
Correct.
It was replaced. So that's the new acronym. And unfortunately, that phone is old enough. It doesn't support LTE. You need a newer phone if you want to use that SIM.
Well, like you said, it's like a brick.
It's like a brick. I talked to T-Mobile. I mean, they might have a, they're a GSM or were a GSM carrier. They might have a GSM phone, but you wouldn't get any of the LTE capabilities. So that means the slower speed data. And so forth. I think they want you to go to LTE. Everybody wants you to go to LTE because that's the future of cell phones. It's better for them too. It's so complicated. Not only do we have these different specifications, and by the way, you can have CDMA over LTE and GSM over LTE, but then we also have the radio bands. And if you want a phone that's going to take maximum advantage of your carrier, You don't have to buy it from the carrier, but you do have to, you know, verify that it supports the bands the carrier supports. And sometimes the carrier's fastest connectivity is, let's say, on 900 megahertz. You got to make sure your phone supports that 900 megahertz radio. So it's complicated, especially if you're taking a phone from one carrier to another carrier, especially if it's an older phone. Because older phones, it's less so now. More and more phones are just kind of compatible everywhere in the country. But in that iPhone 4 era, they would make phones for Verizon, and they would be different from the phone you'd buy at T-Mobile. Nowadays, one iPhone's, I think, pretty much like the other. In fact, almost worldwide. Maybe the Chinese iPhones are a little bit different. Alan, Seal Beach, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Alan.
Yeah, hi, Leo. I'm calling with a question about NoScript. And I don't want to tick off Steve Gibson after listening to a couple of...
He's a known NoScript aficionado.
Yeah, he really likes it. I run it in Sandboxy, and, you know, I'm getting sick and tired of it.
Yeah, I turned it off. I gave up on it. So the problem is, what NoScript does is it turns off JavaScript. The problem is almost every website and their brother use JavaScript. There's nothing inherently wrong with JavaScript. So Steve's a security guru. So he's telling you use Ghostery, use Sandbox IE, use NoScript. And yeah, you're going to be more secure. You're also going to have a very poor experience on the internet. And ultimately what I did with NoScript, I just kept disabling it to the point where I thought, why am I even using it?
Yep, I never knew what to turn off anyway.
Here's what I would do. I think Sandboxy is a good idea. Instead of NoScript, use Ghostery. Ghostery is a plugin for Firefox and Chrome that will tell you what the website's doing to spy on you, what techniques they're using, what bugs they're using. And that information is more valuable even than, you know, turning off JavaScript disables a lot of that stuff, but it's a blunt instrument. If you use Ghostery, you can disable selectively. Say, you know, I don't want Google Analytics anymore or whatever. I like that a little bit better. And truthfully, I don't use any of them because it's too much trouble. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Did you see my, where is it? Love these. I got my new tracker. So I'm going on a trip and the tracker has been helping me for years now. When did they come out? Like they were a Kickstarter like 2 or 3 years ago, right? They've been helping me ever since then not lose my keys. But now... the tracker is going to help me not lose my luggage. I'm putting one of these in every bag. Put it in my camera bag for sure. This is so cool. This is the Tracker Bravo. It's the newest tracker. And boy, big improvements, I have to say. Thinner, lighter. They hardly weigh anything. It's about the size of a quarter, but it weighs less than a quarter. And its Bluetooth range is maximized, 100 feet. So it pairs to your phone. And your phone has the tracker app on it, and it knows the last time it saw your keys or your luggage. But even better than that, with their crowd GPS network, it will notify you when somebody else with the tracker software in their phone comes within range of your bags or your keys. So that means you, with this crowd, 1.5 million trackers have been sold. With this crowdsourced network, you're going to get constant updates about where your stuff is. That's why I want to use it in my luggage. I think it'll be really awesome. They're very affordable. They're the only, to my knowledge, Bluetooth tracker that has a replaceable battery. That's really good. The other guys, you throw them out when they're done. You can't keep using them. The tracker, it's easy as pie. I think it's a CR, is it 2016 or 1660? I can't remember, but they're inexpensive. I have a ton of them. When the tracker dies after about a year, you put the new battery in. And you're good to go. It's as easy as can be. So this keeps on going. I have them on my keys right now, and I have my keys attached to my bag. So I've called that one my backpack. But I'm gonna have bag one, bag two, remote control. You can even put it on your pet with a tracker waterproof sleeve. You put that in there, and it's small enough. It's not going to even bother a cat. The Tracker. I love them. TheTracker.com. Promo code Tech Guy for 30% off your entire order. And by the way, this is the new UV printing. It goes right on the anodized aluminum. You can get engraving too. It's not a sticker. It's not even paint. It's like in there. So you get any image you want on your tracker. I love that. TheTracker.com. Don't forget the promo code Tech Guy for 30% off your entire order. Now back to the Tech Guy show. Hey, 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 Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Last segment of the show today. A reminder that next week Scott Wilkinson will be here. So reserve your home theater questions. Scott's going to be here all weekend talking home theater. And you know what? I'm thrilled. We've got joining him Jason Snell. And you may know that name if you're a Mac user. Jason is the was for years the editor-in-chief of Macworld magazine. Later editorial director at IDG, where he ran Macworld, Windows, and other magazines. He's an expert on computing. He currently is a Mac blogger at sixcolors.com and really knows everything about every kind of computer. He and between Jason and Scott, there will be no question unanswered. And I'm going to come back from vacation and they're going to say, it's our show now. Goodbye.
I hope not.
I know, it's always worrisome. You've heard the story of Wally Pipp, right? Yeah, he's very famous first baseman for the New York Yankees in the 20s. And Wally had a headache one day. His head hurt. He said, you know, coach, can I take the day off? Coach said, well, all right, I guess we got this rookie kid. I guess he can play first base for you. His name was Lou Gehrig. He played first base for the New York Yankees for another 15 years. Wally Pipp never got another shot. So I always worry. I always worry when I take time off. But okay, so I may be Wally Pipped. But you know what? You're going to have a great show next weekend with Scott and Jason. And I thank them for doing it. Aaron in Melbourne, Australia. Hello, Aaron. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I am great. Thanks for calling.
So my question is, basically, I'm an IT guy, and I work on computers all the time, and I found it really annoying having their card around a keyboard and mouse and screen to work on a computer tower. And so basically, I've kind of hauled together out of an old laptop and some parts, like a portable version of that. So it's a keyboard and a screen. And
you just kind of carry that around with you?
Yeah.
Wow.
So basically, a USB cable I can just plug in the back and a VGA cable, and then I don't need to get
So you basically built your own dock.
Probably the reverse.
It's the opposite, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, and basically, so I'm still kind of making one for myself. It's kind of half working. I'm still getting there. But I've realized that it's not really the kind of product that you can buy anywhere, and I was thinking maybe it's the kind of thing I could make, like, as a product. And I was wondering if you know, like, even where I'd start to look at doing that, how you'd go about trying to get, you know, mass production of something.
So first of all, if you were just going to build it yourself, you could obviously, you know, there are lots of ways to do your own kind of wire wrap prototyping of stuff. But if you want to do mass production, would you do a PCB board? You'd make a circuit board?
Well, I'm not too sure, because right now I've got, because on eBay you can buy, I don't know what they're called, I guess they're LCD drivers. So you just plug in a laptop's LCD panel and it gives you HDMI and VGA.
Oh, interesting.
Like, I've used that. And for the keyboard, I've had to manually map and work out which key was what, and then wire that into another key.
What a great project. What a great project. And, you know, you might be the kind of thing you could do a prototype on and then go to Kickstarter and say, would anybody like to buy this, and see if there's an interest?
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I would, because if you find it useful, who knows, maybe 1,000 other people would. And you could actually, do a production run. But the trick is making a prototype. There are now, it's really interesting, there are a number of places that will make a board for you. You'd have to design it first. But there's sites like ExpressPCB, that's expresspcb.com, where they have software that you would use to lay out a board. And I think you probably know the circuitry well enough. You've mocked it up, right? I mean, you've got it working. So you could design a PC board, and then the software will actually let you get one made.
Okay.
Which would be pretty awesome, right? Now, you can get one unpopulated, so you put your own resistors and stuff on it, or you can get one populated. It's not very expensive. Yes. It's an interesting idea. It's Express PCB. Okay. I love this idea. We live in an interesting time where, you know, it used to be you'd have to work for a big company. You know, that's how Woz designed the Apple One. He worked for HP, and HP had a storeroom full of components that anybody who worked at HP could use as long as they gave HP the right of first refusal. Like, I've invented this calculator. Would you be interested? So Woz used these components and built the Apple One computer. Went to HP, said, you want to sell it? And they said, yeah, we don't see much of a market for that. You can have it. And there you go. That's how the most successful company in the world started. So yeah. Nowadays, it's much easier. You don't have to work for HP. You can go somewhere like this and design your own. I love this. And then make a prototype. And then I would strongly suggest going to Kickstarter and seeing if there's interest. Because if there is interest, you might have a business.
Because my problem is I don't really know how to design circuit boards, but I basically put a bunch of things together. So I had an old laptop. I ripped it apart. I found out that the trackpad was really PS2, so I rewired that.
You're smarter than you're giving yourself credit for. You got a lot farther than I would have.
Okay.
Yeah, you know enough to.
Well, thanks.
I think, to use this software and design something. By the way, they're not the only company that does this. There are a number of others that do this, where you can design and build custom PCBs. We live in a magic age for this kind of thing. I don't think you'd have any trouble finding somebody to help you with this. And you know what, Aaron? If you decide to put it on Kickstarter, call me back. We'll give you a big plug.
Okay, thanks.
Good luck.
I gotta say, I love all of your shows.
Thank you. It's so nice to have you listening. We have a lot of fans down under, and anytime you're in the States, come up and visit us, will you?
I definitely will.
Thank you. Nice to meet you. Take care, Aaron. One last call before I go home. Bob in San Diego. Hi, Bob.
Hello, Leo. I think you've now joined the Tesla Club, and I wonder if you had an answer to how to get iHeartRadio into the Tesla.
That's a great question, because you're a Tesla owner?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. So you know that we have TuneIn, and we have Slacker. And in other countries, they have other. In Australia, for instance, they have Stitcher, I think. So they've made deals with these companies. But you're right. I'd love to get iHeartRadio in there. You could listen to the tech guy.
It's the browser because it won't allow Flash.
Right. The browser is very primitive. I noticed I can't even go to teslamotors.com on the browser. So I was told, yeah, the browser's, you know, that was kind of never intended to be a full browser. So the only way I know of it is to have iHeartRadio on your phone, pair your phone to your car, and then do it like everybody else does, not on the big screen. But I would love to hear from other people. There are lots of interesting hacks for the Tesla, including websites designed to give you an interface to more stuff you can load on the Tesla browser and then use that. And I haven't used any of these yet, but there may be one that does, you know, the Tesla, does iHeart on the Tesla. I'm not an expert on that yet. I've just been, you know, playing with the software and driving around and enjoying it. It's a great car, isn't it?
Oh, definitely. I love it. And basically, it's on a trip where I find that the T-Mobile seems to have connectivity, but my Sprint phone doesn't. It'd be nice to be able to use the built-in to pull us in.
Right. What do you know? Who they use for their carrier for their LTE in the Tesla?
I believe it was T-Mobile.
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know, but I'm running out of time. But I'll tell you what. Let's investigate, and if I find out, I will get back to you. And I certainly happen to work for the company that does iHeartRadio, so maybe I can talk to somebody upstairs. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great geek week, Scott Wilkinson and Jason Snell next week, and I'll be back in two. Take care. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.